On September 4th, 2010, February 22nd, 2011, and many occasions afterwards, major earthquakes shook the city of Christchurch, allowing the old wetlands to temporarily re-establish themselves and leaving swathes of land, especially to the east of the city, uninhabitable. After its century-old Treaty of Waitangi claim was settled in 1999, Ngāi Tahu made quick work of restoring its political, cultural, and economic influence. However, Christchurch remained visually and culturally dominated by English aesthetics and values. What's happening in Christchurch today may be a world-first situation, and in the wake of a devastating natural disaster, the local Indigenous people are involved in the redesign of a city from the highest governance level right through to the actual physical reconstruction.
The empty places behind you and the empty places where we were, they were filled with street after street of empty houses. The people had gone, their houses were there waiting to be demolished. And it was coming up to our Matariki celebration that was over in our other little area, which was a council playground, where for the first time after the earthquakes, people were coming to plant again and to reconnect with the land. So now I'll shut up and I'll tell you the fact. It's called Rezoned. Empty breezes wander streets where the windows of silent houses gaze without any expectations. There was no time for farewells, only the hurried leavings. Come quickly, don't turn back. Nothing is left here now. Yet around abandoned playgrounds, children's laughter lingers, making the invitation to come, grow, plant, forage among the stories of those who stayed, singing, swimming, roosting through sunshine, rains and mist, filling the breezes with hope. Kia
ora. Tēnā koutou katoa. Nau mai, haere mai, ki te Indigenous Urbanism, Aotearoa Edition, Episode 22. I'm your host, Jay Kake, and this is Indigenous Urbanism. Stories about the spaces we inhabit and the community drivers and practitioners who are shaping those environments and decolonizing through design. On this episode of Indigenous Urbanism, part two of our story on the Ōtautahi rebuild, we look at the work of Ngāi Tahu and Regenerate Christchurch to develop alternative uses for the residential red zone to the east of the city, including the re-establishment of biodiversity and food gathering areas.
Tēnā koutou katoa, ko Chōti Jāri Nāho, ko Waitaha, ko Kati Māmui, ko Ngāi Tahu, o ku iwi. It wasn't long that in my connection with the red zone that I realised I'm walking through the memories and the stories of my Waitaha, Kati Māmui, Ngāi Tahu, Tupuna, who came here for hundreds of years gathering food and gathering resources and teaching their children how to do this mahi. And when they did this, they came and they greeted the rivers, they greeted the land, and the land nourished them, and their greetings nourished the land. And for me, those memories, those stories of my tupuna are in this land. And whatever happens to the red zone, those memories and those stories need to be honoured in whatever way it's possible. We've just seen how some of these stories can be honoured in the city. The red zone, as Tamarano said before, is a clean slate. No one knows quite what to do with it. But for me, it's a place that holds those memories from hundreds of years ago and those stories from hundreds of years ago. And they feel, now with my connection to the red zone, they feel like they are my memories now and they are my stories. And whatever happens in the red zone, I would like to see some honouring of what those stories are. My tupuna, my ancestors, we were the first ones to be red zoned. When the settlers came, we had to move. And now they came and they built in the place where our old people said, why are they building here? You know, this was our food basket, but oh no, we'll drain it and build houses. Well, you can see what happened. And for me, Ruamuku has returned the land to us and given us the opportunity to allow the land to return to its original purpose, which was a mahikakai, a place where we gathered food. We've seen downtown how those reflections of our tūpuna are happening now. They weren't there before the earthquake. So honestly, the earthquake has given us this opportunity to place our mark on the land once more and tell the land's stories through it. There has been some kōrero around, can we designate this red zone land to be its own personality and under the kaitiaki, under the guardianship of Ngāi Tuahuriri? So that's still something that's in the wind, you know. This is an opportunity that very few people get, and that's thanks to Ruamuku. I know a lot of damage was done and a lot of heartache, but for me, he's been giving us this opportunity, and we need to take best advantage of that as we possibly can.
That was Tioti Jardine. Tioti is a poet from Ōtautahi and a kaumātua for the Avon Ōtākaro Network.
Residential areas, and of course folk planted trees, fruit trees, in the sections, and nobody told the fruit trees that there'd been earthquakes, and so the trees continued to fruit even after these sections had been abandoned. So community groups have come around and taken the fruit from those trees and redistributed them to social organisations that can use them.
Regenerate Christchurch was established in 2016 to lead the regeneration of Christchurch, and have been working closely with Ngāi Tahu on various projects, including the re-establishment of Marakai in the red zone.
My name is Hugh Nicholson. I'm a Pākehā. I live over on the base of the hills here. I work for an organisation called Regenerate Christchurch, which is owned half by the government or the Crown and half by the local council. And we're a planning agency, so our job is to plan for the future of regenerating Christchurch. And one of the specific tasks we've got is planning for the future of the red zone that we're walking amongst. There's lots I could talk to you about, but I thought what I'd talk to you a little bit about is how we're going about it. So I'm a designer. I originally trained as a landscape architect, and I became an urban designer, and I've kind of worked in all sorts of places. And look, for years, you know, we've grappled with the Treaty of Waitangi and how do we collaborate? How do we partner with local iwi and design in partnership? To be honest, you know, we've tried all sorts of stuff, and I don't mean to run it down, but, you know, we've sent plans off, we've consulted, and sometimes, you know, we get comments back, and sometimes the council or whoever makes changes, and sometimes they don't. And to me, it always never felt like a partnership, really. I don't know how to describe it. And what we've managed to do, I think, is to set up a relationship with Ngāi Tuahuriri and the Matapopuri Trust, whom you've heard a lot from, so that their designers, we've set up a design team for the red zone, or I've set it up, and their designers we're working at the same table, you know, with the pencils, well, not with pencils and pens, with computers, and but you know what I mean. Metaphorically, we're drawing plans together. We're making the plans as we go. We're having the discussions about values and about how things should be. And to me, that's the first time it's felt like a genuine partnership in terms of design. That actually, you know, we're speaking the same language, we're using the same tools, and we're writing things down. So that's been it's an eye-opener for me. For that to happen, and I think it's, you know, there are a number of things which are really important, and one of which is the Matapopuri Trust. Is, look, all of these things are about having relationships with the right people, you know, and I think Tamari alluded to some fairly, you know, some disastrous attempts in the early days after the earthquakes to start designing things which went wrong, and you know, by talking to the wrong people. The Matapopuri Trust is set up by the Runanga, you know, it's established, and it has their mandate and their confidence, you know, to actually make some decisions to design on their behalf. And that's essential, you know. It's not just, we're not just dealing with any Maori designer who, you know, and we're sitting down with the people whom the Runanga has said, you know, your responsibility is to design on our behalf. So that relationship is really important, and that's something that we have to keep checking back. And I guess, you know, for us it's been a great partnership. I joke in terms of the design that my plans are really just an excuse to sort out three important things: funding, ownership, and governance. They're the things. I have a project where I have no funding, I have no who owns it, and I have no agreed governance. So that's really the important questions that are on the table about this red zone. That's what's going on behind the scenes as the various players are sorting those things out. And the plans are something that give them a reason to sort them out, to figure out what's going on. We've tried to set up a kind of a philosophy of mahinga kai. And I realise I'm amongst a group of people who know much more about this than I do, largely, and my iwi colleagues. What we realised is that Pākehā culture, we have a kind of long history of setting up national parks and things. I don't know, where you have a bit of land and you protect it. You know, you make it green, you know, and you kind of keep people out. You kind of, you know, it's protected and people sort of, they work around it and they go and visit it sometimes and enjoy it. What we don't do very well is we don't have a kind of philosophy that includes people in a space, but actually where people are part of the whole kind of equation. And we felt that Mahinga Kai in the broader sense, so including food gathering, but also harvesting materials such for carving or for weaving, but even in a broader sense, sustaining the environment so that it can do this and that people can live in it, so that it becomes a kind of a sustainable system. We felt that's something that the whole of Christchurch could benefit from. Sure, is an underlying idea. Sorry.
Real quickly jump in. So when we developed the framework and the Mahinga Kai framework, I firstly just want to say that if we had come up with the request to look at an area of land as vast as this and basically apply an Indigenous framework to how we address it, would have been, you know, quite unheard of a few years ago. But because, you know, we've been working with the likes of Hugh over many years and we've built up a lot of trust and a lot of respect, you know, and these guys have built up a lot of understanding about what these values mean. So we were able to, we had some good ears and understanding to the Gombak, which was really fantastic. But the idea behind adopting an Indigenous values-based framework is that within an area of land like this, there are many things to consider. You know, you've got the social dimension, economic, you've got the environmental, you've got the concept of kaitiakitanga. How are we going to actually create an ethic where people are themselves the custodians? So that brings in the concept of education, mātauranga. So an Indigenous framework allowed us as a design team to consider all these things and the interplay between them. Allowed us to think about things like whanaungatanga, how we actually engage socially, how do we create spaces that bring people together collectively so that they can talk and be, and you know, and be whānau, be community, and inspire community and grow the concept of community. And really importantly, you know, the concept of economic growth. So this area did have an inspiration, the community do have an inspiration. They actually do want to build themselves economically. The tribe has the aspiration, the Rūnau has the aspiration to develop economically. So, you know, we're thinking about all these things and the interrelationship between all of them. So by applying that Indigenous framework of Mahinga Kai, you know, it was really quite significant and it makes sense. And we were then allowed to then spin off into those, you know, different actual areas with the knowledge that everything has been thought of and united through this concept. And the importance of education. So, you know, Hugh's talking about, you know, being able to use those resources. That's all very well and good, but to be able to use those resources, you need to understand those resources. You need to understand those cycles. You need to understand how to read the environment. You need to understand everything there is to know. So, you know, wrapping in the concept of mātauranga, the concept of education into the way that we design environments is critical. Because, you know, actually, if our plan works, you know, people are starting to learn and know, and they will know by the time actually we've managed to clean up the river and create those forests so that people can actually harvest those resources in a way that's respectful of the land.
That's Debbie Tikau, General Manager of Matapōpuri Trust.
In the city, we saw some great examples of artworks, some physical manifestations, and here we're trying to incorporate an underlying design, you know, principle, you know, which gives us strategic direction for the whole project.
Here's Te Marono Lenehan explaining where exactly we were and talking about the significance of community-led Mahinga Kai projects.
Just over the back, beyond the buses, is the Travis wetland, the big wetland system. The river's just over there. And so connecting the river to the wetland, there's a waterway behind these cabbage trees on the other side. In terms of, I was talking in the bus about the saltwater wedge when the tide comes in and the saltwater pushes up the river, and at the top of the tide is the saltwater wedge, which is where some of our fish species, that's where they spawn and they breed. The saltwater wedge is about this area of the river, and so it's an important spawning ground for native fish. So that's sort of some context about where we are. And what we've done together is, you know, it wasn't so many years ago when this was all grass. And so in a few years, our community leaders have brought the community back into the area they've been turfed out of, and we've planted this up. And in just bringing people together with their shovels, and I know when Debbie came down with their family, they were the first through the door and away with the babies. I mean, just planting trees together and having something to eat together, listening to some music together, and just feed that idea of growing life around us that they can then feed us. And it was really strategic in a way, is to say, get in there, bring the people back, and start socialising this idea of food and environments that feed us. And hopefully that will filter itself up to the decision makers, and it will embed itself into our future.
Perhaps put a few challenges out there from our experiences of the last few years.
That was Evan Smith, a trustee for and leading member of the Avon Otakaro Network. Evan is a local resident who has dedicated himself to greening and beautifying the Red Zone and River of the Lower Avon that was so badly affected by the earthquakes.
My name's Evan. I'm Pākehā. I'm directly descended from one of the original colonialists in the first four ships, so-called, that came into Littleton Harbour almost 200 years ago. I used to live up the road. A couple of suburbs up there also decanted like this, was red zoned. It was a really horrific time during the earthquakes, but it was also the best of times in some ways because it brought communities together. We had an enormous amount of community cohesion immediately after the earthquakes, in response to the earthquakes. And that was Tangata Whenua and Pākehā together responding. Then we ended up in a position where we were told we were red zoned. I was one of 6,000 households in this corridor that was told we had to move. And there was another 3,000 households around the rest of the North Canterbury area that were in the same position. And that was horrendous to deal with. It also was an opportunity. So it was also had some positive things. I was one of the community leaders that emerged from the recovery process. The point of red zoning stepped out of the recovery phase, all the arguments with insurance companies, and started to look at what the future might look like here from the point of view of people that used to live here. You would have heard today that it was an organisation called SERA for the first 3 or 4 years, that then 5 years, wasn't it? Then it some of their functions got transferred to other organisations, including Regenerate Christchurch. For most of those initial 5 years, the wider communities of Christchurch felt locked out of their own recovery, of their own regeneration. So we've worked hard with the authorities, with the politicians, to ensure the voices from the communities, the wider communities, are starting to be heard now and have some influence in what happens. And for the first time in Regenerate Christchurch, we have an organisation and an agency that is listening and is consulting and engaging with communities in the wider sense. And so I just want to be careful that you don't end up being iwi and agencies together and community gets locked out again. And that includes Matawaka as well. It's important that all the communities are considered in the whole conversation, whilst not devaluing the value of iwi connection. And the other one, I think, is around capacity. Every community organisation in their job wants to have a relationship with mana whenua, and that's incredibly difficult. There's got to be better ways of making that happen better. And if it needs resourcing, what we keep on telling all the philanthropic organisations that we get funding from is they've got to fund that kind of advice and support and liaison. And that's being heard now, I think. This project is 3 or 4 years old. It was called the Mahingakai Exemplar. It was a piece of council land we could work on because it wasn't restricted by the restrictions on the Crown land where we can't plant and everything else at the moment. So this is what's grown in the last 5 years. There's over 7,000 plants in here, and there's a few other thousand over on the other side as well. This is designed as an educational resource, which what Debbie was saying before. In a week's time over the road there, the first of 7 primary school classes will be coming down to study the inanga and the inanga spawning. And that's been woven into the story of Mahingakai. And to me, that's what the real value of these places is, that young people, both Pākehā and Tangata Whenua, are beginning to learn the stories of the land again and understand the meaning behind that.
You can find out more about Regenerate Christchurch at regeneratechristchurch.nz. Indigenous Urbanism is a production of Te Matapihi. Sandy Wakefield does our sound recording, editing and mixing. Our theme was composed by Thomas Burton. I'm Jade Kake, your host and executive producer. For more information about today's show and other episodes of Indigenous Urbanism, go to indigenousurbanism.net. You can drop us a line at info@indigenousurbanism.net. And if you like what you're hearing, please give us a review or rating on iTunes. Coming up next on Indigenous Urbanism, we speak with Cheyenne Thomas, an architectural designer from Pegwas First Nation, about her work with First Nation communities in Manitoba and her role as a designer and advocate.
I think physically and also non-physically aspects of our cultures and how deeply rooted they are in the land and how deep we can connect to people. People are starting to realize that. So through the cracks of society, the light's kind of coming through. And physically, we're getting these opportunities, and now all of a sudden, you're growing it even more in like a more tangible way.